from Celia Cabaret is at your disposal. Howdy-do! Far-out notions, swine flu potions, hemorrhoidal cream, karmic triage or massage by ultraviolet beam. And introducing cannabis, the herbal wonder, uncontested, safest medicine in the West.
Isn't that the medicine you use, Grandpa?
That's right, kiddo. It works great. Which is why some were none too happy that he was telling everyone about it. Like Barnacle Bob.
Dude, I'm Barnacle Bob, don't make me be an asshole. A barnacle's been a-growing out my face. I used to surf around these crappy waters. Just where my heart rot out, I cannot place.
Grandpa, I thought you said this was a Western.
Well, it is, kiddo. Hawaii's about as far west as you can go. Barnacle Bob was a washed-up surf punk turned methamphetamine dealer. You stay away from them, kiddo, or you might have a barnacle growing out of your face. Or worse, they're about the orneriest drug around, except for mayhaps them oxycodones. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Oh, Barnacle Bob was mad, and he warned Dr. Sparkles to get or be sorry. You see, nobody in their right mind's gonna use meth when they can smoke Pacalolo.
Pacalolo?
Pacalolo, marijuana, ganja, hemp, dope, reefer, hash, otherwise known as cannabis. Smoke it, eat it, rub it in your skin, relax your mind and body so the healing can begin.
You can pick 'em, you can stroke 'em, you can burn 'em, you can smoke 'em. Pacalolo,
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 Pacalolo.
Well, people can get a bit silly on Pacalolo. Of course, one doctor was none too pleased that the townsfolk were having such a fun time on the good doctor's medicine. In fact, he saw it as downright competition.
Who, Grandpa?
None other than the world-famous pain specialist, Dr. Prick.
Who do you think you are holding this seminar? These townsfolk don't require your snake oil quackery. I suggest you leave, or you will be sorry.
Scary is the thought, which makes you question all that's taught. But finding you're a fool can be amusing. The question that I ask is this: is cannabis a medicine, or vice versa? If safe, effective, and enjoyable when using,
it's safer than cocaine and heroin too. Safer than methamphetamine. It's safer than aspirin, acetaminophen, hydrocodone, oxycodone, methadone, morphine. It's safer than vaccines, fluoride and caffeine, high fructose corn syrup, aspartame. It's safer than alcohol, beer and tobacco, and pure cane sugar from Hawaii.
Safer than sugar?
That's right, kiddo. More than a little bit of sugar is bad for your teeth and metabolism and makes kids go plumb loco. And speaking of loco, Dr. Prick and Barnacle Bob were crazy mad at Dr. Sparkles for undermining their business. We're about to gang up on the good doctor when who should show up but the local terrorists.
Terrorists? Yikes!
Not terrorists, kiddo. Terrorists. Them back to the old Hawaiian way folks.
Support your local cannabis. From farming swamp to point. Help the Kikikitachi.
Now them terrorists aim to live simply, but they ain't no dummies. They figured that if it's safe for the messenger, then the message is safe for them. so they tied the three up and forced them to take their own medicine for a whole day.
Oh, no. What happened?
Well, it didn't take too long before Barnacle Bob OD'd on that crystal meth he was dealing. The doctor pricked didn't last much longer on them oxycodones he was prescribing. Both keeled over and croaked.
What about Dr. Sparkles?
Well, kiddo, after smoking that weed all day, he got the most intense case of the munchies. Ain't so much poi, them terrorists named him an honorary member.
I guess cannabis really is the safest medicine in the West, Grandpa. Say, is that baked spaghetti done yet?
Dr. Sparkles.
Baked to perfection.
My goal is to get as much information into the living rooms of the people that we serve. And that's the biggest piece right there. However it's done, we're going to do it collectively, right? Mm.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, so we have on the line Kevin Baker.
Yes, we do.
Hello, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Oh. Thank you for having me.
All righty then. Okay, so Dr. Baker, why don't you start by giving us a little bit of your history and the background of who you are and what you do and all of that.
Oh, well, I am a physician that specializes in cannabinoid medicine. I started out as a family practice doctor. That was my training, but I've always had an interest in alternative, holistic medicine. And although it was always, I guess, an option, even when I was living in California, to do the medical cannabis work, it never really occurred to me to do it. It wasn't until I was living in Hawaii, we moved to the Big Island. This was back in 2009, and we were, I was working at an urgent care there, and I only had part-time hours, and it wasn't really enough for us. So we, my wife and I, Michelle and I, decided to start up our own practice, and we started up a mobile medical clinic. It was the Big Island Mobile Medical Clinic, and one of the services we provided, in addition just to general practice, was cannabis certifications through the state of Hawaii. And that became our big attraction. That's what everybody was seeking us out for, that on the Big Island. So we ended up kind of veering into to basically specializing in that. I ended up getting some extra education through, what was it, the organization, a couple of organizations, but one of them was the American Academy of Cannabinoid Medicine. I got some training on understanding the endocannabinoid system. And, of course, a lot of the what I've learned is basically just working in the trenches, working with people and seeing how cannabis helps people.
Mm-hmm. So can you, well, there's so many questions I want to ask you all at the same time.
Yeah.
So what are the conditions qualifying patients to register with the state to use cannabis legally?
Well, at present, the conditions are HIV or AIDS, cancer, glaucoma, PTSD, which is a new condition that was just added this year. And then any chronic or debilitating disease that causes ongoing severe pain, nausea, muscle cramps or spasms, cachexia or wasting syndrome, which is basically malnutrition due to loss of appetite, and seizures.
Mm-hmm. So when
that's what's allowed, that's what the state recognizes at this point. It varies state to state what conditions are recognized, but that those are pretty standard ones.
Mm-hmm. So when you're when a new patient comes in, I mean, there's lots of scary stuff about marijuana and it's going to do all kinds of terrible things to you and la-di-da. So when your patients come, are they open to using cannabis as a medicine, or are they kind of frightened and have to be educated?
Well, usually by the time they come to me, they have gotten some education about it.
Oh, okay.
So I don't have to do too much. I mean, I try to educate them, but I don't have to do too much, you know, talking about the addressing fears in terms of how the cannabis is going to, you know, have bad effects or ill effects on their health. The it is unfortunate that there is a big... There's a big stigma that's result of, you know, a long-standing drug war that's been fueled by a lot of propaganda over the last 75 years.
Mm-hmm.
So there are fears. More often, if I have fears, it'll be a patient comes in with, let's say, an aunt or an uncle, and that person is the person who's afraid. And so they might ask some questions, you know, about it. But usually by the time the patient comes in, they've made the decision that that's what they feel the benefits would outweigh the risks.
Mm-hmm. I see. Well, that's good to know.
What's the registration process in the state of Hawaii through the Department of Health?
Well, the registration process is an evolving one. It's from the beginning, which this became a law back in 2000 in Hawaii. Hawaii, by the way, was the first state to legislate it into law through, you know, their Congress.
Sure.
Other states, most states that have medical cannabis programs have, you know, these sort of proposition or voter-initiated kind of things that they can vote it directly. Hawaii was the first to do it, and that was back in 2000 through an act of legislature. And it started out with through the Department of Public Safety, or basically the police, the Narcotics Enforcement Agency or Department. And just this last year, it switched over to the Department of Health, which in some ways sounds better because it's rather than the police kind of being involved in which is kind of like regarding the patients as suspects.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Department of Health, which is regarding, you know, the patients as patients.
Right.
Of course, with any state bureaucracy, there's challenges, and this is we're going into a new realm now because the Department of Health is trying to do this all online.
Okay.
Starting this month,
it's
an all online process. You still have to come in to see a doctor to get the certification, but the patients have to do their application online, and then the doctor follows that up with their certification online, which is kind of a challenge for a lot of people. Some people it's great, but some people don't even have computers. I have some patients on Big Island that, you know, they don't have email accounts. They don't even have, you know, power. They live in a lava tube. So it's kind of a discriminatory process in terms of how it's requiring everybody to do it online. That being said, in some ways, I think it might be streamlining it. It might make it so it's a faster process, so everything's input into their system, and they just have to, you know, make sure everything's right, and then the cards come out faster. Back when the Department of Health was doing it, it was taking up to generally about 2 months, but there was a stretch that it was taking up to 6 months for patients to get the registration cards. Now the Department of Health is saying that they're boasting that it'll be, you know, 2 to 3 weeks. We'll see how that works out.
Mm-hmm.
But just to back up, the basic process is patient comes in, and it's a standard doctor's appointment. I make sure that they have a qualifying condition, going through records and getting a history and a physical. And then we explain the laws to them, make sure that they understand what they're getting into, and then help them through the application process, like I said, which is now online. And then it's just a matter of waiting for the card to come, and that gives you, that gives a patient the license to be able to grow up to 7 plants and to be able to use the cannabis for their medical needs for the next year. And if they want to renew, they can do that, you know, the following year.
Mm-hmm. I had some more questions on that line, but we just had a caller call in. And,
sure.
Y'all, you want to ask that?
Sure. A young lady called, and she has a son and daughter. They're both 18, 19. And when they were in school, the school wanted to, they've been diagnosed with ADHD, and the school wanted to give them, you know, the Ritalin or the meds, and they did not do that. And they were just wondering if it would be legal to treat ADHD with cannabis.
That's a great question. And I get stories all the time of patients who have, let's say, they were in a car accident, a young person was in a car accident, so they have severe pain, but then they'll say, but, you know, I've been using marijuana for, you know, since I was 14, diagnosed with ADHD, it worked better than the Ritalin did, or worked better than whatever other medication they were having for it, with less side effects. So it definitely does help many people who have that condition. Unfortunately, though, in Hawaii, that isn't one of the qualifying conditions. The only what might be called psychiatric condition at this point that the state recognizes is PTSD. And it definitely helps with that. But they don't recognize anxiety. They don't recognize depression, even insomnia. I mean, these are things that cannabis can definitely help with, but they aren't qualifying conditions. So they wouldn't be legal. I couldn't make it legal for them, for that person, if that's all that they had to be able to use it.
So is the health department's diagnosis limitations, is that going through any kind of change, or is that like in cement for now, or can the public petition the, because there's so much information about the benefits of marijuana with the ailments that you just described. Can that be petitioned and added to the list?
Yes, absolutely. There is a process, and this last year it's been sort of put into a detailed checklist on what needs to happen. It can be a patient-initiated thing, or it could be a doctor-initiated process. It is extensive that what has to go through, but it would still have to be, again, approved by the Department of Health. But there is a process to start that happening, and ADHD would be a great one to fight for.
Mm-hmm.
Because it helps a lot of people with ADHD.
Do you know if other states that have the medical marijuana, if ADHD is on their list of allowables?
I'm trying to think. I don't think so.
Okay.
The only state that would be a condition that could be treated would be California, because California, their law says they don't just list conditions. What they say, basically, any condition that as long as the doctor certifies that the benefits outweigh the risks, which I think is preferable, because that's what you want the doctor to treat you. You don't just want the doctor to treat you according to some sort of cubbyhole.
Exactly. It makes
so
much
California
sense.
Actually, it would be a qualifying condition, but not in any other state, to my knowledge.
Okay.
I see. Thanks. Now, the Department of Health, just there was an article in the front page of the paper here, I think it was last week, talking about the dispensaries and such. Did you happen to see that?
I haven't seen that article. I know there was a meeting in the legislature just today on trying to hammer out the rules on how it's going to be all administered.
Mm-hmm.
It's all going to be under the Department of Health.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I understand it at present, each county in Hawaii is going to get a different number of dispensary licenses, at least for the first year or so. 4 on Oahu, 3 on Big Island, 2 in Maui, and 1 in Kauai, and then each of those licenses can have 2 storefront dispensaries, which can open as early as July of this coming year, 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Which leaves, kind of unfortunately, Kauai is going to leave it a monopoly until they open it up to other licenses.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. The article was kind of scary because the limitations. I mean, they couldn't grow it in a grow house or a greenhouse.
Or outside.
And it had to be grown on a cement slab. And
they had to use grow lights. They could not use, like, a greenhouse with the sun shining through. They couldn't use...
Or solar.
Or solar power. It all had to be electrical and grow lights.
It has to be real controlled. I guess that's what they're aiming for, and isolated. The one bit of good news that I can offer, at least at this point, is the state has said that patients who are, registered will still be able to grow their own 7 plants,
okay,
regardless of whether they want to use the dispensary or not, or need
okay
to use it.
Well, that's excellent, because lots of people have asked me to ask you that question. So there you have it. Okay, wonderful. That's good news. Okay, let's move on to the, can you talk about the science behind understanding the endocannabinoid system?
Sure, I can go into a little bit. So endocannabinoid system means it's basically the endo means inside us. Whether or not you use the herb cannabis or one of its, synthetic versions like Marinol, which is basically THC, we have our own receptors for cannabinoids, as we call them, and we make our own neurotransmitters called endocannabinoids. They're spread out throughout our body, primarily concentrated in the nervous system, but also the immune system. And one of the ways that they work, one of the amazing ways they work in the nervous system, is they have a negative feedback loop. In other words, normally when one nerve is trying to communicate to the next nerve, neurotransmitters go from nerve 1 to nerve 2 across that little space called the synapse. Endocannabinoids, it's been found, go the other way. They go to the receiving nerve to the sending nerve, and they basically say, okay, I got the message, you can calm down now. And this makes sense when you think about what the big effects of cannabis is just to relax the nervous system. Mm-hmm. So it kind of keeps things moving at a keeps the body working and functioning in a way that's at maximum efficiency, which is in a relaxed state.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is that stress downregulates those receptors of the endocannabinoids. So, and that kind of makes sense too, because if you don't really want a relaxed nervous system, if you're really in a situation of danger or threat, you want to, you know, those neurons fire at full volume and to be able to run or jump or do whatever, fight or flight. And chronic stress leads to that chronic downregulation, which means that our body doesn't really work at good efficiency. It isn't efficient in terms of its nervous system, because the endocannabinoid system is suppressed by stress. So taking an herb like cannabis, which has cannabinoids, and taking it into our bodies, it supplements that system so we relax back into a more efficient space.
Mm-hmm. I see. Well, that's interesting. Can you describe the difference between hemp and marijuana, indica and sativa? And then there's the THC and CBDs. Can you go into that a little bit?
Sure. So it's sort of an artificial difference between hemp and marijuana. They are basically different. It's like different versions of the same species that have different properties that have been selectively, genetically selected for those qualities. Hemp is generally used, that word's to describe the industrial hemp, which has a minimal amount of THC. It's mainly grown for, traditionally grown for the fibers in its stalk. And, like I said, it has virtually no, mind-altering properties. However, it does have CBD, which is one of those cannabinoids that I was talking about. The two major cannabinoids are CBD and THC. THC being the psychoactive, the main psychoactive cannabinoid, which we find in much higher quantities in what we call marijuana or cannabis. These two cannabinoids, THC and CBD, both have medicinal qualities. THC, for example, it does have the psychoactive properties, which does seem to help with some of the conditions, but it also can stimulate appetite. It seems to lower the pressure in patients who have glaucoma. CBD, though, is the powerhouse. CBD is the cannabinoid that's been shown to have the anti-inflammatory properties. It treats pain, it treats spasm, it's been shown to treat certain forms of cancer, it treats nausea, it really is the medical wonder in the plant. So I generally recommend for my patients, almost all patients, to try to find strains of cannabis that have both THC in them, but also CBD, at least a CBD of 1%. which many strains of cannabis that have been developed over the years for recreational purposes don't have anymore.
I see. Is the connection with CBDs and the fact that hemp is illegal, is there a connection there, or is that, am I just connecting dots that don't exist?
I don't know. That's a good question. Why hemp was made illegal is a huge political question. It probably has to do with you know, way back in the 30s and 40s, some big industry that didn't want competition from hemp because it's an amazing plant, you know, in terms of just human basic need, the empowerment that this plant provides in terms of the seeds can be crushed to make oil, which is the seeds themselves are nutritional. They have some of the essential fatty acids that we as humans need, almost a perfect balance of them. Highly nutritious, the seeds are. But the seeds also can be crushed into oil, which can be used as a fuel. The fibers in the plant can be used to make, you know, clothing, used to make sails. That's where the word cannabis and canvas have a similar root. And also you can use the pulp to as a building material and to make like paper. It's a medicine source. So it really is an amazing plant that hemp is.
You know, what you're talking about was what was going on in the 20s and the 30s. It was used as medicine there as well, wasn't it?
It's been used for, yeah, it was in the standard Western medicine book. It was a standard medicine thing, medicine used from the 19th century well into the 20th century. It wasn't until, I believe it was, there was a revolution in terms of how to be able to extract the fibers from the stalk in a way that was much more labor efficient, that's when there was a big push by folks like Hearst and there's a bunch of other ones. There's basically
DuPont was another. Was
DuPont? Yeah, because they developed the plastic.
Yeah.
And so.
So the pharmaceutical, nylon, the big pharmaceutical right. companies didn't come in until, I don't know. I'm sure there's she's major, huge lobbyist against using hemp and marijuana for medicinal purposes.
Right. What and why CBD or why I should say industrial hemp has been kept illegal in the throes of the drug war is that the only explanation that's given is well, you know, law enforcement people wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
Yeah, I've heard that.
But there is a difference in terms of its chemicals.
Yeah.
And curiously, industrial hemp does have a high amount of CBD in it. Mm-hmm. So it does mm-hmm. have medicinal qualities, although it's not psychoactive.
I see. Okay.
So the hemp, so a person could use hemp seed and get the benefits of a CBD from the hemp seed?
Well, the seed, I don't think you're going to get too much. I don't think there's too much cannabinoid, any kind of cannabinoid present in the seed, but one way that you can get it from the plant is to juice it. You can juice both, you know, standard medical cannabis, most of the strains, or recreational cannabis, or hemp.
Oh.
And by juicing it, what you do is you avoid the THC converting into the psychoactive state. It's normally its THC acid is found in the live plant, which is non-psychoactive. So this has been a new thing that many people are doing, and I encourage my patients to do it. It's probably the healthiest way to take the plant because you get this full spectrum of cannabinoids without the psychoactive effect.
Mm-hmm.
And you could benefit from the industrial hemp plant in the same way.
I just want to let folks know this is the Kauai Hemp Show. This is KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea, and we have Kevin Bako on the line, and he's answering all our questions about
hemp and marijuana.
Yeah.
So this has been a treasure. Thank you. Thank you, Kevin, for coming on the air.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
What are the risks? Are there any health risks for anyone to be using either the THC or the CBDs?
Well, I mean, any is a pretty broad category. Mm-hmm. I would say generally what I tell my patients is that it's a very safe medication. And the most dangerous aspect of using cannabis is really dealing with law enforcement.
Yeah, that's the side effect.
And it's just because it's such a safe plant. When people ask me why they raise these concerns, the health risks, whatever, you know, developing nervous system, all this sort of a thing. When they say it's dangerous or it's addictive, I encourage you to ask and reply, compared to what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dangerous or addictive compared to what? You know, I would say it's not addictive. It's possibly habit forming, but then again, so is social media. You know, how many people have a habit of getting onto Facebook, or how many people have a habit of, you know, playing some game on their phone. That's habit forming.
Mm-hmm.
And I would kind of put cannabis probably in the same category as those in terms of that. In terms of how dangerous it is, again, compared to what? Compared to ibuprofen or aspirin or Tylenol, which are far more dangerous than these things.
Or alcohol.
Or alcohol, right. Right. So it's a very safe medication. Nobody's ever died from it. I even tell patients who are pregnant. Some people who are pregnant sometimes have concerns about, you know, should I stop doing it? Should I stop when I'm breastfeeding? All those kinds of questions. So what I say, well, ideally, you have the purest diet possible. We all do. But definitely when you're pregnant, there's a developing fetus in you. You want to try to have as pure a diet as possible. But then what if you have symptoms? What if you have awful nausea? Well, compare using cannabis, which again is never been
a little bit. Wait a second, Kevin. Can you hear me? Okay, Kevin. Hello. Kevin, can you hear me? We're having technical difficulties. Kevin, are you there?
Kevin, I'll have to call back in a little bit.
Okay, Kevin, can you call back?
I tried to bring somebody else up on the line with to ask a question, and it didn't work. So.
Okay, so Kevin, if you're listening, please call back. Okay, well, we're just going to wait for a few minutes in here, and we can. By the way, if you have any questions, you can please give us a call at 826-7771, and we'll take your calls. And, is that Kevin? Let's see. No, it's not Kevin. Okay. And if you have any questions for Kevin that you'd like to speak to him directly, the number is 808-854-6335. And I'll repeat that. That's 808-854-6335. And if you want to reach Kevin by email, that email address is doc@kevinbaiko, kevinbaiko.md.com. So you can give him a question on. I'm getting information over here. What's the information?
Kevin should be there.
I'm back.
Oh, hey there. Great. Okay, so thanks for coming back. And we have a question. We have a caller on the line, and he would like to ask you a question.
Sure.
Oh, wait a minute. No, we don't. Okay. So evidently he's on a call, but I guess we lost the caller too. I don't know what happened to the phones. They're actually working a little weird these days.
Something that I would like to say just to kind of complete the thought that I was sharing.
Oh, please do.
Cannabis isn't for everybody. Some people, it really doesn't agree with them. They don't feel good when they use it, and so it's a very safe medication. but it's not for everybody. And so it's something that, that people need to try if they want to, and then make that decision for themselves.
Mm-hmm. So what about if somebody, you know, they want to try it and they get some sativa and it doesn't work for them? Could they try an indica and that may work? Or are there other kinds of, you know, and, you know, if you're a patient, how would you know which one to use? I guess you could tell them.
that's a great question. And these old sort of like different categories of cannabis. There's sativa and there's indica. There's other ones like that have been brought up, like ruderalis. Different types of ones aren't necessarily the best indication of what the cannabinoid breakdown is in terms of CBD, CBN, THC, CBG, all the various cannabinoids, and also terpenes, which is another chemical class, which seems to, those are the chemicals that give the smell and the flavor to the cannabis, also have medicinal qualities. We're only just learning about these. The best thing I can say is to keep trying until you find something that works. And if you find something that makes you, that doesn't feel good, then avoid that strain if possible. There's been so much sort of crossbreeding and hybridization between indicas and sativas that it isn't necessarily the most reliable breakdown. Although indicas tend to have more CBD.
Oh, that's interesting.
So they tend to have more of what I would say the more medicinal qualities than the sativas. But some people say, you know, they get a sativa and that's what works for them for treating pain. So, I mean, who knows? I think that the pain, that the treatment of pain with cannabis has two parts to it. There's three parts, really. There's the treating of the inflammation, which is sort of the underlying mechanism, and treating the pain itself directly. But there's also sort of a mental component. It's many people, when they use cannabis, it's almost like that the psychoactive property shifts their perspective, so they're looking at their pain, they're aware of their pain, but it's like they're not in it as directly. And so it sort of distances them from the pain in a way that they can deal with it more.
So it's a little bit of a distraction in a way.
Maybe.
Maybe
that's the way to describe it, sure.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, did you have a question?
I do have a question. Is there an age restriction for somebody who could get a prescription? Like, do you have to be 18?
In Hawaii, there is not.
Oh, so...
In Hawaii, you just have to have a qualifying condition.
Uh-huh.
And certainly there are, you know, I have a couple children who have seizure disorders, and it helps them tremendously with that. But when a minor signs up into the program, of course, they have to have a parent or, you know, primary caregiver that takes responsibility for it.
Mm-hmm. So if a person was going to take some and try some and whatever illness they might have, would they take it during the day, or would they take it before they go to bed, or does it just depend?
It depends on the condition and depends on the individual.
I see.
Okay. It really does. Some people, like, for example, glaucoma, which is a condition where a person's the pressure in their eye, the intraocular eye pressure, is really high. It's high to the point where it can cause pain and damage to the retina, to the vision. And for those people, to really adequately treat it just on cannabis, they're going to have to take it on a regular basis. I mean, if they're inhaling it, it only stays in your system for so long. So you need to, that person would need to take it like every 6 hours,
mm-hmm.
for example.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if they were to ingest it, depending on how much they do ingest, that will last longer. And so they can probably get away with ingesting it less. Very, very typically, most of my patients, probably the most patients are pain patients. chronic pain patients. And very typically, what these people do is they will use it at nighttime. So at the end of the day, when their body's sore and tired, they'll use it. It helps them kind of calm down. It helps them get a good night's sleep. It treats the pain enough so they can sleep, and then they're ready to, for the next day.
Mm-hmm. I see. Well, I think that's real helpful for new patients. Yeah, I just had a caller. What's the question?
I just want to let everybody know there's 11 minutes left until Jazz with John. Can You Dig It Jazz is coming up, and he's subbing for Cousin Rich, and he'll be on because he's in Chicago. All right, so Jazz with John, but subbing to have Can You Dig It Jazz is 11 minutes away, and I just wanted to let everybody know that. I did have a question. It dealt with hempcrete. Would you be willing to answer any questions about hempcrete?
Sure.
Okay, this caller was they want to build a 120-foot square shed, which the 120 was determined because you don't need a permit. And they were just wondering if you had an idea of the acreage of hemp that it would be required to use hempcrete, to be able to process this into hempcrete and use that.
Wow. It's a math question.
Yeah.
I really don't know.
It's really funny because I had a caller that had a 500 square foot house that they wanted to know the same question: how much hemp can you grow? And it's like, I don't think that he's going to know that question. But you know, you're a pretty smart guy, so you might, you know. And you are building a house, so, and you do use hempcrete, so you know.
Right. I have some experience in building with hempcrete, and the. Most of the hempcrete you're going to get is going to be grown in another country, right? It's going to be grown at this point, unfortunately, still. Where we got ours was through a company that grows it in England. And so it comes, it looks like little broken, tiny little fibers and sticks of the hemp plant. It's the core of the hemp stalk, so it's more pulpy, but it still has a lot of fibers, and it comes in these big bales, and that's the way. I mean, that's my experience with it. You mix that with a lime-based binder, and then the lime, put it to a mortar mixer, and the lime impregnates into the fibers in the hemp, and you basically hand tamp it between forms.
Do you use rebar? Do you use rebar within the form?
No
rebar. That was my question.
In fact, you have to be careful using any kind of metal within the hempcrete, which, again, if it's lime, it'll eat the metal away.
Oh, I see.
Unless you coat the metal with some sort of an epoxy cover. What I would also add is it's a fairly labor-intensive process of this hand packing. You have to pour it in, and you have to pack it in. What's embedded in the hempcrete itself is generally a wooden. It's like wooden framing, like a normal framed house, but you just frame out. We framed out 4 inches away from the studs, so you end up with basically a foot thick wall.
Wow.
I don't know why you'd want a foot thick wall for a garage. Or a 10x12 building, but you could do it, and it wouldn't really take that long for just a 10x12.
Okay.
Okay. I have a question for you. People that smoke marijuana are a little worried about inhaling, and I understand that there's vaporizers around. And would you recommend a vaporizer? I noticed you talked about eating it and juicing it. So how about the vaporizer?
Yeah. So other ways that you can use it. A way that many people overlook is actually to use it topically. It absorbs into the skin. Our bodies absorb oil, and cannabis is an oil-soluble medication. So a lot of people treat their pain just by rubbing it into their sore joints.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you basically infuse it into a good base, like coconut oil. Looks great. Mm-hmm. It's great for the skin. I've used it on sunburns, and I don't burn. You know, it's really amazing that way. As far as vaporizing, there are there's such a huge market, ever-growing market of different types of vaporizers. There's handheld ones that look like you know, like a little e-cigarette or a little mascara stick. I mean, they're very, very small, and they're portable, and they can you can charge them just like on a USB port on your computer if you wanted to. And then there's big ones that are more stationary. The type that I like are the types that actually inflate a little balloon, basically, or inflate a bag like a volcano, which is in the more high end. And then what you have is you have this air which isn't even hot. It's just medicated air, and you breathe it in. So it doesn't, you don't even cough using it. It's very, very gentle to the lungs.
We're going to wind down here a little bit, but I wanted to give people your email address in case they have questions they'd like to email you directly. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay, it's doc, at kevinbaiko, kevinbaiko.md.com. And how about your phone number? Can I give you your office number?
Sure.
Which is 808-854-6354. I'm going to repeat that. That's 6335. I'll repeat the whole thing. 808-854-6335.
That's it.
Okay, got that right. Okay, so anyway, Kevin, I really can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on the show, and it's been very interesting. And what did you want to say? Did you want to say something yet?
Well, I know you come to Kauai every so often, and I was just wondering if you wanted to give the next time that you're going to be on Kauai to and your office will be open, and where it's located.
Right. So our main office is in Kapa'a, and we make a point to be on island, available to see people at least 1 week every month. So the next time, our next time frame will be January, like January 23rd.
Okay, January 23rd, and they can go on your email to find out a location and get all that information.
Yeah, a good resource would be our website, which is HawaiiCompassionateCare.com.
There we go.
And that has all the details on the registration process, tells a little bit about myself and my wife, Michelle, who is just as much a part of our business as I am.
Oh, she's such a peach to work with, too. She's so delightful.
She is.
Well, I didn't have your website, so I'm really glad you mentioned that. So that's great. Would you repeat that one more time?
It's Hawaii Compassionate Care, all spelled out.
.com. Okay, Kevin. Great. Okay, this has been great, and I guess we have to wrap up for our next show.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. Yeah. It went by so quick.
It did, and I hope you'll come back again.
All right.
I'd be happy to.
And
we're going to leave with your other persona, Dr. Sparkles. And do you want to give us a little bit about that before we play this song? We started the show with the one you emailed me, the Spaghetti Western.
Baked Spaghetti Western.
Yeah.
That was based on some of our, sort of a cartoon version of our misadventures on Big Island when we started.
Oh, dear.
All right. And I'm going to finish off with Beast of the New World Order.
Oh, my goodness. You are, huh?
Oh, maybe I shouldn't. I haven't pre-listened to it.
You can.
Okay.
I'd personally recommend Rastaman Santa if you have it available for the season, but feel free. The Beast of the New World Order.
Okay, well, I think he's looking for it. He's going to look it up, because that would be fun. That was great fun. And you know what? A nice surprise that you've got all this wonderful talent. You know, and your songs are so much fun. So
that's something that's kept me sane, which may explain why I haven't been feeling so much that way, because I haven't been doing as much music as I'd like to. But hopefully this next year I will be.
Okay,
so,
well, give us let us much. Let us know what you create, so we can put that on the air.
I sure will.
Okay, I guess he's still looking it up. Are you gonna get it? Okay, nope, not quite yet. We're not quite ready.
Yeah, that was from my first album, the Dr. Sparkles Sail Away. Rastaman Santa.
Okay, if somebody wanted to get your albums, can they? How would they be able to listen to your music?
DrSparkles.com. They're also available. They basically, I sell them through CD Baby.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks again for taking time out of your busy schedule to answer our questions and just help educate us out here.
Yeah. Okay. So, do you want to play a song? Which one are you going to play?
I'm going to play by request from Dr. Sparkles himself.
Okay. Okay. Bye, Kevin. Thanks again.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Rastaman Santa, Rastaman Santa, Rastaman Santa, Rastaman Santa. On the cool breeze of Christmas Eve, he flies on the wings of the sun. His magic sleigh of the ganja, he bring gifts of joy to everyone. He's Rastaman Santa, Rastaman Santa, Rastaman Santa, Rastaman Santa. Children of Babylon cry in joy when they hear his name. Makes no difference where they are, they're still children of Jah, just the same. To Rastaman Santa, Rastaman Santa, Rastaman Santa, Rastaman Santa, Christmas Eve, he fly high on the wings of the sun. On his magic sleigh of the ganja, he bring gifts of joy to everyone. He's Rastaman Santa, Rastaman Santa, Rastaman Santa, Rastaman Santa, Rastaman Santa, Rastaman Santa.
And you are listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea, Work Wise Community Radio Station, and this is John Subbin for Cousin Rich. Can You Dig It Jazz? Coming up in a few minutes, cuz is in Chicago, probably freezing to death. Anyway, Can You Dig It Jazz is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Marine and Mower.
Kauai Marine and Mower, located in Old Kapa'a Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and Mower features Honda garden and lawn equipment and also Echo Power Equipment. 823-0556.
And a big mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio and Can You Dig It Jazz. And we're going to start off tonight with something's been appropriate, Stormy Weather by Earl Garner from his CD Ultimate Jazz Collections, a short track. Yeah, a little classic Earl Garner there, Stormy Weather. And we're going to be a little bit seasonal on this show. We're going to play Miss Ella Fitzgerald's